This is the America's Quarterly Podcast. I'm Brian Winter. Latin America's economy seems set for another year of solid growth in 2024, although the picture will vary a lot by country. On today's podcast, we'll look at which countries may perform better, which will do worse, and where the risks to this relatively positive scenario may lie.
2023 was a year of resilience for Latin American countries, and we see this trend continuing in 2024. But when I think in terms of growth, I really see two different groups. You have the large economies, Mexico and Brazil, which had surprisingly high growth last year, both of them. We see both of them decelerating this year. But this deceleration would still be in line with their trend growth. So we shouldn't really portray it as a slowdown. And then on the other group, you have countries like Chile, Colombia, and Peru, where we expect them to recover from a difficult 2023.
It's become a kind of tradition here on the AQ podcast. Twice a year, we take stock of how Latin America's economies are doing and look ahead to the months to come. So here we are at the beginning of 2024. Overall, the region's economies perform better than analysts expected in 2023, especially in Brazil and Mexico. The latest issue of America's Quarterly was a bullish case for Latin America's economies going forward. So where does that leave us for 2024? Which countries are likely to grow more and why? With elections this year in places like Mexico, what will their effect likely be on economies and investment? What should we make of new leaders like Javier Milei? And what should we expect from unpredictable factors like El Niño and climate change and the impact that they may have on economies? Covering all this, well, it's a tall task for 30 minutes or less, but our guest is a real expert, my friend Ariana Ortiz Bolin. She's the Vice President and Senior Credit Officer for Latin America Credit Strategy and Research at Moody's Investors Service. Ariana, welcome to the AQ Podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here, Brian.
So, Ariana, for the last 3 years, going back to the pandemic, most forecasts about Latin America at the beginning of the year ended up being too pessimistic. That was true in 2023, when GDP grew about 2.3% on average across the region. That's according to the IMF. So that said, what is your general view of the health of Latin America's economies as we head into 2024, and why?
Thank you, Brian. Yes, I mean, to give you a general statement, I would say that they're resilient. 2023 was a year of resilience for Latin American countries, and we see this trend continuing in 2024. But when I think in terms of growth, I really see two different groups. You have the large economies, Mexico and Brazil, which had surprisingly high growth last year, both of them. We see both of them decelerating this year. But this deceleration would still be in line with their trend growth. So we shouldn't really portray it as a slowdown. And then on the other group, you have countries like Chile, Colombia, and Peru, where we expect them to recover from a difficult 2023. So the three of them will grow faster in 2024, but this will also be below what we expect them to be their medium-term growth. So just to give you an example, Colombia, we estimate that their trend growth is around 3%, but yet we're expecting a 1.8% growth next year. And that's better than the 1.3% that they grew in 2023. Take Chile, which had a contraction in 2023, and we expect now a recovery to around 2%. But again, that's still below their trend growth.
As a credit analyst, you look closely at interest rates and funding conditions and how that affects companies in these countries. What's the outlook on that front?
You know, inflation has been decisively on a downward trend for most of the region, with Colombia an important laggard and Argentina, as always, a big exception. But even if inflation is slowing down, prices will still remain high. And that means that interest rates will also remain high. We're starting to see some central banks beginning to cut rates, particularly in Brazil. We saw this in Chile as well. In Mexico, we expect that to happen in 2024. But interest rates will still remain high and prices will remain high. And what does this mean? Well, this means that for many of these companies and many of these countries, they will fund their needs at much higher rates than they were used to before this surge of interest rates. And for the real economy, we think that 2024 is going to be the year when this monetary policy, this restrictive monetary policy, starts to bite the real economy. And this means that consumption will start to slow down because consumers, now that they've spent their savings from the pandemic times, will start to actually feel looser labor conditions. And we expect companies also to start to make tough choices. We've seen actually many downgrades and some defaults in the Latin American space since last year, a trend we expect to continue.
So what I'm hearing then is that overall in Latin America, economies will grow at about the same rate in 2024 as they did in 2023. That's what the IMF says. Again, I'm expecting about 2.3% this year, but that the engines will be different. There'll be some of these countries that underperformed in 2023. And yet at the same time, it sounds like a more stressful and maybe even volatile environment for both companies, governments, and consumers. Is that about right?
Yes, that sounds about right, given the deceleration and the actual bite of these interest rates to the real economy, to the people.
What's your sense, Ariane, in general terms about how investors are feeling about Latin America right now?
You know, I like to answer this question, Brian, thinking on what we mean by investors, because investors' feelings really depend on the asset class that they're covering. It could be debt markets, equity markets, FX, or the long-term FDI investors. So they can have very different views on the same country, really depending on what their investment strategy is. But the kind of investors that I talk to most of the time are debt investors, FX investors. And Brian, I'm always very surprised by how much they care about the US growth and US interest rates and what happens to China. I would attend panels that are supposed to be about emerging markets and Latin American economic outlook. And they spend most of the time talking about US growth and US interest rates. This is true, particularly so for 2024 compared to 2023. There's a lot of uncertainty on what's going to happen with US interest rates. If there's going to be cuts early in the second quarter, like what we think at Moody's, or if it's going to be more at the end of the year. And so this really impacts investment strategies for Latin America.
So it's interesting you say that. Everyone knows that the Mexican economy especially is so closely linked to what the US economy does. But is that also the case with these economies in South America this year? Do you think that they will also be very dependent upon what happens in the United States?
Yes. I mean, that's what I've been discovering in this market, that it's always very dependent on what happened in the US, because for them, it's really a decision on where they park their money. And with interest rates being high, now the risk reward math has changed, right? So there's a lot of competition for emerging markets with private credit, for example, in the US. And so why go far and invest all this time understanding the politics in Latin America and the corporate dynamics in Latin America if you can just invest in private credit in the US? But, you know, investors are constructive for emerging markets and for LATAM in particular for 2024, because we expect now rates to come down. We don't know exactly when, but the expectation is that rates will come down.
In the US?
Yes, in the US. And also in emerging markets, right? At different stages. But in general, inflation has been tamed across the world and rates will start to come down. And so investors will want to park their money in high yield. And so there's going to be a demand for duration. And this is good news for Latin American assets. So, you know, in that regard, investor sentiment is a little bit better in this year than it was in 2023 for LATAM. But you also asked me about the FDI, right? And so they have different considerations. And I do think that for them, I would give you three examples. In Chile, we had the constitutional reform process that is finally over. And President Boric was very clear in his view that he's not going to launch another process to reform the constitution, and they'll focus on policy priorities that address social demands. This is good news for investors that were concerned about potential changes in regulatory environment, changes to the way that negotiations in labor are conducted. And so this should dissipate some regulatory uncertainty and be beneficial for investors long-term in Chile. Another example could be Brazil, where there's been more reforms than we had expected. That recent tax reform is particularly positive because it should streamline the onerous taxing system. And that has been welcome for investors. So we also expect that this will favor some investment in the region, in Brazil. And, you know, last but not least, the nearshoring trends in Mexico, that we can talk more about that, but that will continue to favor FDI in that country.
Yeah, let's come back to that. Let me ask you about elections, which, by the way, just a little teaser for our loyal podcast listeners, that the subject of our new issue of America's Quarterly and coming out later in January, some of that content looking ahead at these electoral races and profiling some of the candidates is already on our website. But it is a super cycle of sorts this year. We'll have elections in Mexico, Uruguay, Panama, the Dominican Republic, and maybe in Venezuela. I don't even want to get into that. My question, though, is from your perspective, how do these elections affect the economic outlook of these countries? Do any of them stand out as possible game changers for you, or do they signal more of the same?
So, you know, turning to the ones where we could see a game changer scenario, as you put it, I think it could be in Mexico if there is a change in Congress composition. That's the scenario that we could see a game change.
So you mean the Congress, of course, is currently controlled by Morena, the party of President López Obrador. You're saying that if there's a switch and the opposition somehow gains control, that could be a game changer.
Correct. You know, in Mexico, before this president, we had seen that the president did not control Congress. And for the longest time, that really meant policy paralysis. In Mexico, it's been really hard to pass reforms. And then we now had a very popular president with a majority in Congress that he still doesn't have the two-thirds majority. And many of his big reforms have been stopped by this and by the judiciary. So a game changer in the next administration will really be if there's a change in the Congress composition and the new president controls Congress. It's hard for us to see that the policy environment will worsen in terms of the narrative towards the private sector, regardless of who wins. But it's important to think that there might be new issues that have been kept at bay thanks to this president's popularity and stronghold that may now resurface. For example, social and governability pressures, policy paralysis, as I was mentioning, or legislative impasse. But you asked me if the economic conditions change depending on who won. And from our perspective, what we really will be focused on, regardless of who wins again, what will be most interesting for us to see is what the new president will do with Pemex. Will there be a change in the business model? Will they back extracting and not refining, which is a loss-making business? Will the government continue to support Pemex and in which way? I mean, we think that we will continue, but in which regard? And even with Claudia, we think that this could be a change, right? It's not a given that she will continue the business model that the current president has done, even though she won't say anything until after the elections.
You're referring, of course, to Claudia Sheinbaum, the former mayor of Mexico City, who is López Obrador's preferred successor. How do you think she might be different from the current president?
Right now, it's too hard to tell because there has been very little policy announcements and policy signals particularly from her. And I think she will be very cautious until the very end not to distance herself from the president. But Pemex is in a terrible bind financially, and an increase of an important fiscal problem for Mexico. So, you know, what she decides to do with Pemex is key. We do think that there's a possibility that there'll be a change in course, even though there has been no indication that there will be. The other important thing is the energy sector overall. You know, to really take advantage of the nearshoring potential, there needs to be a more opening in the energy sector, particularly in renewables and energy transmission that is terribly lacking, as well as water infrastructure. She could make changes in this regard compared to the current president. There's no indication that she's as ideologically attached to these issues as he is, but we don't know how much political gravitas she'll be able to have to do this, or she wants to make these choices. The one thing we do have indication from her is that she does not favor a fiscal reform, for example, a tax reform, which, you know, one could argue it's needed in Mexico more so now that the fiscal space is much smaller and that interest rates are higher and their interest expense is really biting on government finances in Mexico.
Switching gears a bit, it's funny, you know, people don't talk that much about Brazil these days because there's a sense that policy there is on kind of on autopilot, going reasonably well after a year in which the economy grew more than 3%, exceeding analyst expectations. I was struck in your recent report that you published, you spoke about growth in not just the agricultural sector, which was a big part of that positive year, but also in the service and industrial sectors. Could you give us a few more details about where you see good things happening in the Brazilian economy?
Sure. I mean, we should make clear that, yes, it is the agricultural sector that it stood out and that drove the impressive growth performance from last year, right? And that service and industrial sectors will continue to contribute, but will be less of drivers. But what's behind the strength or relative strength of service and industrial sectors is the tight labor markets and the wage growth. And then you'll have the supplemental income, particularly for the lower income sector of the economies. That is supporting service and industrial sectors in the country. So looking ahead in 2024, we don't expect the agricultural sector to have the spectacular performance that they had in 2023 or both. And we do expect that robust wage growth and the tight labor market, which have benefited the Brazilian consumer, will contribute to overall economic growth next year. And we do expect an improvement, but not an improvement that means transformative or increasing productivity or anything that would lift growth significantly. And that's why we're actually expecting an acceleration overall in growth in Brazil. But I guess it's not struggling anymore if we started to see some growth in both sector services and industrial in the last quarter.
I want to ask you about Brazil's fiscal policy. Always an important question, given that fiscal problems caused the country's last crisis a decade ago. Lula's government today is pursuing an ambitious zero primary deficit goal for this year. Almost nobody expects them to actually meet that. But when you talk to investors, they say, well, in a way, it's the intention that counts. How closely are you watching all this? Is it something that could derail this otherwise positive story in Brazil?
Fiscal trajectory is really important for a rating agency like us, but more so at a time when interest rates are higher now, and it's not helping the way that they were helping before. And while we understand that for the Lula government, social spending will continue to be a priority, we do acknowledge that they've maintained spending on check, and we do not expect a major deviation. And we do expect, as you mentioned, right, that they will move towards a primary surplus, even if they may not get there. And this is an important development and a departure from what we had expected at the beginning of this administration, when, you know, we thought that Lula would show more of a trend similar to I can't even now keep straight all the different governments. But when we didn't expect that there were going to be way more spending and way more deviation, that's not happening. And if anything, things are going better than we had expected. There's a shift towards a more favorable view of effectiveness in managing economic policy and also in implementing reform. You know, I mentioned earlier that tax reform that was recently passed. This is a positive development, particularly for the operating environment. We've also seen better communication between Lula and Haddad and the central bank. There's less animosity. There's a better working relationship and also a better working relationship with Congress, right? I mean, proof of this is the reforms. But this will definitely come handy now that they're going to have more pressures from municipalities later ahead in this year when elections come to get more spending from the government. So having a good relationship will help both sides. So yeah, you know, better than we had expected in all fronts, I'll say.
Argentina, where do we even start? You know, the projections of Moody's project that the economy shrank 3.5% in 2023. Moody's expects another contraction of 2.5% in 2024. How do you think about this economy right now, and what's your economic evaluation of the Milei government so far?
Yes, let me start by saying yes, we still expect an economic contraction this year, given the magnitude of the macroeconomic fiscal adjustment that is required and that is envisioned by this government to dismantle the enormous fiscal and economic distortions that have been put in place for over 20 years. And it is an economic contraction because government spending will stop or will significantly be halted, same as subsidies that will affect then consumption and people spending. You have a huge peso devaluation and an increase on inflation. So, you know, simply put, things will have to get worse before they get any better. And this should not come as a surprise for no one. I mean, Milei said it very clearly while he was campaigning that's what's going to happen. Now, you asked me how we see Milei's economic decisions so far. I think it's welcome that the behavior that we saw during the campaign is not here anymore. We don't hear anymore about dollarization. And it's welcome that the kind of team that he has assembled and how they're operating and implementing measures very swiftly. Now, contrary to the Macri presidency, where the preference was for a gradual adjustment, here it's very clear that the preference is for doing as much as they can as soon as possible. But really that the success will depend on how much the Argentines are willing to endure. If they don't push back a lot of these reversals, and if the government continues to power through this, and then if they are able to pass some of the more meaningful reforms in Congress. I mean, so far, a lot of the measures are taken by decree, right, without the need of Congress. So really, time will tell.
Latin America is particularly vulnerable to climate change-related shocks as a major food-producing region. We've seen a lot of that over the last several years. This year, of course, we're also seeing a major El Nino, which has historically also wreaked havoc, particularly on that Pacific coast of South America. What's your outlook for El Nino and climate more generally this year, and how concerned should we be about both of those phenomena?
We should definitely be concerned about El Nino, and more so when you look at Latin America. While a lot of progress has been made for companies and agricultural producers to mitigate the impact of these extreme weather events, El Nino can still have important disruption to activity. One important thing I should mention compared to 2017 is that this time around, we think that companies and countries will be more susceptible to these events also because they have less fiscal buffers, financial buffers than they had, and the funding conditions are not well. So it's, you know, hitting them at not a good time in terms of their fundamentals. You know, just thinking of Peru and Andean countries, so far the precipitation has been more or less normal, but we should not rule out a massive storm or something that affects Peru and Chile in the near future that can affect copper production, zinc production, etc. And that actually can also impact commodity prices globally, given the importance that these countries have on global commodity prices. Now, when you look at other countries that could be affected by El Niño, Brazil and Argentina, Brazil is really interesting because it has continental proportions, right? The country is as big as a continent. So you would have in the north very dry conditions that can affect agricultural output, but then in the south, better than expected conditions that can, again, benefit agriculture. And then you have the utility companies, that the hydropower companies that can benefit from this more rainfall. So, you know, you can have within the same country, depending on the sector and the region, different effects. In Argentina, what I find interesting is that El Niño has already been helping agricultural output. But then if the rainfall is too strong, it can impact operations and then it can impact infrastructure, detrimental to infrastructure, then affecting spending and reconstruction efforts. Just last December, Brian, we saw in Argentina this example where there was an important heavy rainfall that benefited agricultural production, but then affected the ports of grains. So, you know, that's how we are looking at El Niño this year.
We've done a little bit of a tour here of major economies. You mentioned earlier, Ariane, the cases of Chile and Peru as countries that should do better in 2024. Before we go, are there any other economies that stand out to you as we look ahead to this year?
I mean, I think I would mention, you know, what I mentioned at the beginning, that Peru, Chile, and Colombia would do better than they did in 2023, but that's just as a recovery, not necessarily an improvement. Dominican Republic, you know, we're talking about economic performance, really stands out as an economy that has been growing at a consistent 5% annual growth rate, backed by tourism development and remittance growth. And, you know, it's one of the few countries in LATAM where the IMF signals that it's possible that it will transition to a higher income economy, something that is rare in the region. So I think it's nice to end in this more brighter spot.
I agree. I tell you what, that was a pretty good tour of the region in 30 minutes. So I thank you for joining us on the AQ podcast. We look forward to having you back again soon.
It's always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the America's Quarterly Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review, give us a rating, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Quarterly Podcast is produced by Luisa Franco and edited in partnership with Human Group Media.